Welcome to The Box. I'm Matt Briette, president of the Commonwealth Foundation and your host today. Well, we're talking about freedom and freedom in the 50 states, which is actually the name of a study that has come out, an index of personal and economic freedom. And I'm talking with the authors of that report, William Ruger and Jason Sorens. Gentlemen, welcome to The Box.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, freedom in the 50 states. You're looking at personal and economic freedom. You're in Pennsylvania, so I guess let's start there and then work back with why you did this. How's Pennsylvania rate? Are we good or bad or ugly? What does it look like here?
It's pretty average, actually. it's pretty much right in the middle. In our study, Pennsylvania ranks 20th in terms of overall freedom. We're doing some updating now for a second edition that we hope to have come out in January of 2011. And right now, roughly looking around 25 or so.
So it'll probably dropping.
Possibly dropping, but we'll see when we get the final numbers. But it's going to be in the middle somewhere. It's not going to be going to the bottom. It's not going to be like some of your other states. So you're actually doing better than some of your neighbors. And maybe Jason can talk some about those neighbors.
Well, in the middle, and I know there are components to this where we kind of rank in different levels. But maybe before, I just wanted to throw out where we're at, middle of the pack. But why did you guys do this? What was the purpose of this ranking? How did you go about it? And then let's get into, you know, how we fare to our neighboring states and our competitor states. Jason?
Well, the point really wasn't to bash certain states or celebrate others, but to give people a tool to use. So give citizens a tool they can use to hold their legislators accountable, to see where their state's doing well and doing poorly. And also if businesses and workers are considering where to move, right? This is a good tool for that. It's a good tool for legislators to see where they could do better. We do find that freer states attract people. So a state that's losing population, declining economically, can look at our study and see what they can do to get their economy back in order.
William, what are some of the factors that you looked at, the components, if you will, of the study that you then measured of in terms of our freedom?
Sure. And you know, this is a very scientifically rigorous study that has over 100 variables in particular, but we basically break it down into three large areas. We have personal freedoms on the one side, and economic freedoms on the other, and the economic component is broken down into both fiscal and regulatory policies. And so those are kind of the big chunks. So looking at fiscal policies, regulatory policies, and then personal freedom issues like homeschooling, gun control, tobacco regulations, and so forth. But a big component is 25% is the fiscal. So you're talking about taxing and spending, and then regulations as well is the other 25%. So
now, we've seen kind of rankings from lots of other different groups, organizations, and what makes this different? What makes this different from all these other ones that we've seen over the years?
We wanted to be very specific about what we meant by freedom. So freedom for us is individuals' right to dispose of their own lives, liberty, and property as they see fit, so long as they don't infringe on the same rights of others. So we have a very specific view of freedom, and we measure state policy. So we're not throwing in indicators like the education of the population or technology or other factors that are really aspects of state culture or the state economy. We wanted to look very specifically at the legal environment of the state. Now, there have been a couple of studies before that have done the same thing just with economic freedom. But we're the first to look at both economic and personal freedom. And we also happen to think that that we measure economic freedom better because mm-hmm. we use so many more variables.
Well, William, in terms of the breaking down of the components, you've said Pennsylvania ranks 20th. How do we rank in personal freedoms, just that the half of it? What does the picture look like there for Pennsylvania?
Well, Pennsylvania is 29th. But rather than focusing on that particular number, it's in the middle.
Okay.
And, you know, we're not talking really about the difference between, say, the ideal personal freedom of absolute lacking, or kind of the minimal coercion and Afghanistan or Burma, right? So it's not as if, you know, places like Pennsylvania are really sliding to tyranny. On the other hand, there is a big difference. And like Jason said, it really shows up in terms of how it affects things like migration. So a small, you know, relatively small change in overall freedom, but also personal freedom, that's going to increase the possibility that you're going to see a decline in your population, which has all kinds of ramifications, just in terms of the opportunities for our children, moms and dads that don't want to see their kids having to leave the state in order to find jobs. It's going to affect things like that. So it's not we shouldn't merely think of economic growth as whether we're richer or poorer in a narrow sense, but in terms of our overall quality of life.
Where do you find the states that have the greatest level of freedom, economic and personal? Are they kind of clustered together, or are they, you know, all across the country? What do you find there?
Well, the top five are New Hampshire, South Dakota, Colorado, Idaho, and Texas. So most of those are in the West, New Hampshire being the clear exception. And in fact, out of our top 10, virtually all of them are in the Rocky Mountain West. Virginia, Tennessee, and New Hampshire are really the only standouts in the East. So what that tells us is that what makes for a free state is a citizen ideology that's favorable to freedom. And what that means is basically we're talking about conservative states that are not as imbued with the kind of legacies of race relations that that maybe the Deep South has, and kind of this maybe I think a fear of crime that drives some of the restrictions on personal liberties in some of the more urbanized and some of the more southern states. So the Rocky Mountain West, they've got that sort of combination of
Cowboy West, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the rugged individualists like their personal and economic freedom.
Well, right, what is right. Is there a commonality that you find amongst them, or a theme that develops other than that? I mean, is there something that, I guess what I'm looking for is that what is it that we need to develop in Pennsylvania so that we can get closer to the top 10 or top 5, or the number 1, of course, would be my preference. But what do you find commonalities there?
Well, some of these things are relatively difficult to change, right? You have to change citizen ideology, and that means presenting your ideas to the public over the long term. You're talking about a generational shift, really, that has to occur.
Right, and that's where institutions can really play a strong role, like the Commonwealth Foundation, in kind of helping us get that long-term ideological change in terms of people's personal, the kind of how they value freedom, both on the economic and personal side. But it's also up to our legislators and our educators to really kind of educate for liberty, broadly speaking, to talk about why it's important. Not merely because we value freedom as an intrinsic value, but also in terms of what kind of consequences it has for future generations, that high spending is going to affect the well-being of our children. And like I said, with in sense of out-migration, whether they actually live in the state that they grew up in. And so you have to present this, I think, to a lot of people as a consequence-based formula.
Well, I know that's been a challenge for Pennsylvania, is that we have been on the wrong side of the migration equation, meaning more people leaving here. And I also have noticed, and this has been just anecdotal as an outsider, I'm not from Pennsylvania, and I know that most people are in Pennsylvania have always been here, and they know nothing different. They don't realize that Pennsylvania is one of only 4 states that is a full-time legislature on the level of California, New York, and Michigan. They don't realize that most states are part-time, all of these things. And so without the in-migration, people coming from other states, it's the same old, same old. But on the other end of the scale, the states that have the least amount of freedom, where are they? Are they clustered kind of like the free ones are out west? Is it us in the Northeast that
are struggling? Yeah, I mean, unfortunately for us Yankees, me being from New Hampshire and you here in Pennsylvania, the Northeast fares very poorly, with the exception of New Hampshire, that is. So in terms of the bottom 5, you're talking about states like New York, New Jersey, Rhode Island, Maryland, and California. So you can see that the Mid-Atlantic and the Northeast in general isn't doing so well. Now, You know, in terms of Pennsylvania, it's actually doing fairly well compared to its neighbors. So if you look at that bottom five, New York and New Jersey are doing quite poorly, but also states like Ohio aren't faring very well. And Pennsylvania is roughly in the middle. But that, you know, so that presents quite an opportunity for Pennsylvania actually to hopefully drag in populations from some of these other states. I mean, if it could increase its freedom, both on the economic side and personal side, it may attract those highly productive workers from New York who maybe they don't want to go all the way to Arizona to get those jobs and good houses and low regulations. Maybe they'd like to come to a place like Pennsylvania. So maybe it could be a regional magnet. And New Hampshire is a regional magnet. And so it's not simply people moving from colder states or retiring from these colder states, because New Hampshire has net in-migration, despite having the same relatively bad weather compared to, say, Texas as Vermont and Maine and Massachusetts, which have had net out-migration. So you can really create a foster a kind of business and environment and personal freedom environments to attract those kind of highly productive young workers.
Yeah. Is this really a red state, blue state issue that when you look at this, it's all the Republican states that have more economic freedom and all the Democrat states have more personal freedom? Does it shake out like that?
There's a correlation. It's not a perfect correlation, but certainly you look at the bottom five, they're all heavily Democratic states. So part of this, I think, is that these Democratic states have set up institutions that favor interest groups that are closely tied to government. I mean, for one example would be labor regulations that tend to benefit unionized workers, right? So you have much higher unionization rates in these states because of the laws that they've set up, whereas some of the more conservative states have right-to-work laws, so fewer workers are unionized, so are less of a political force. And that means that they're not going to be there lobbying for socialized medicine and higher taxes and higher government spending across the board. So, freer states tend to be those that have that are more Republican, that tend to have right-to-work laws. But again, it tends to be among the Republican states, the more Western states.
Yeah, and there's this kind of popular myth that if you want social freedoms, you need to be in places like California or the Northeast, where you know people are more tolerant and they're more socially liberal. Whereas the red states in quote-unquote flyover country, you know, these are places that might be economically free, but there's not a lot of perfect freedoms. A lot of personal freedoms, and that isn't actually borne out in the study. Some of these deep blue states that rank at the bottom in terms of economic freedom aren't doing very well either in terms of personal freedoms. Now, Maine is an exception, which ranks very highly in terms of personal freedom. But in general, it's not the case that you have this dichotomy between blue states and red states in terms of one being economically conservative and the other being personally free. That what we see actually is that a lot of red states, the kind of pinker red states of the Mountain West and of the upper Midwest, that these places are both economically and socially free, whereas those deep blue states are neither. And so that's actually a real problem for those states. And I think puncturing this myth is an important thing to do. You don't have to make a trade-off between these different types of freedom. You can have both if you have the right institutions and the right kind of ideology.
As you guys are going around and sharing your study and talking to policymakers, what is the thing you want them to take away? What should they leave, knowing what your study says? How should they be going about to improve economic freedom in their states? What are some of those key themes that you're trying to communicate in this?
Well, above all, legislators should know that freedom matters and freedom sells. They're not going to hear that from any lobbyist, right, that they should care about freedom for its own sake. But look, we show that the average American wants freedom, right? That's why they seek it out in their decisions on where to live.
Or at least the margin does, right?
Yeah,
and it's on the margins that these decisions matter. I mean, there are a lot of people that like that kind of nanny state as a desideratum, as the economist Jim Buchanan has talked about. But enough people value it, and these people move. And we think our intuition is these are people that are highly productive, that want to escape the grip of kind of central planning at the state level. And when we hope as a country that they're not people that want to leave the country too. But that's why we need all of our institutions at the local, state, and federal level to kind of embrace freedom, not merely because it's an intrinsic good, but because it has good consequences the more they do so.
And does the in migration, does that correlate high with the states that are high on freedom, the freedom index, meaning that, that people are voting with their feet, that they're going to places like Texas and Idaho and other places? Is that a strong correlation? I mean, that, that people get it. People understand where freedom exists.
We do find that. So, and we control for climate. We find that, for instance, Pennsylvania, from our model predicts that if Pennsylvania were as free as states like Missouri and Texas, that it would have actually seen its population increase by 1.7% over the 7-year 2000 to 2007 period, instead of actually losing 0.4 of a percentage point. So it's actually a substantial effect. You can see your population rise if you undertake fairly reasonable, moderate reforms in a pro-freedom direction.
And if you look at some of Pennsylvania's neighbors, like New York, Ohio, New Jersey, they rank very poorly on the freedom index, both in terms of economic freedoms and personal freedoms. And these are states that are losing a lot of their population. So New York has lost over 7% of its 2,000 population. And New Jersey has lost a significant number of folks, as has Ohio. And what's interesting is that the less free you are in terms of these states, the greater your out-migration has been. So while Pennsylvania has lost folks, it hasn't lost as many as New Jersey, Ohio, and New York.
Because those states are worse.
Yeah, exactly. But the problem is that you're still losing people. And that's going to be a big problem as we move forward, especially given the nature of these social welfare programs and pensions that they're basically built like pyramid schemes. So you need people that are coming into the marketplace and working, these younger folks, in order to help pay for those senior citizens that are, that are on these pensions.
Indeed. Well, we've been talking with William Ruger and Jason Sorens, authors of Freedom in the 50 States, an index of personal and economic freedom. It's available at Mercatus.org if you want to get a copy of that. And gentlemen, any closing thoughts that you'd like to finish us off with here?
One of the things is in the education area, where you could reduce the regulations for private schools and for homeschoolers. And those are ways in which you can kind of free up the educational zone, which will introduce competition for those public schools that exist. Now, I'm a big fan of using vouchers, as Milton Friedman was. But if that's not someplace you can go, at least you can unburden some of the competitors to the public school systems. And that'll make those public schools maybe a little bit better for those that choose not to to leave the state schools. And those are some of the ways we can try to improve Pennsylvania.
Well, a lot of people think that the federal level is where all the action is. I think education is a good counterexample to that. You can really do a lot for freedom at the state level when you focus on education. And I mean, a lot of it's controlled at the local level even. So it's an easy place for activists to get involved, and it has a long-term impact because that's the next generation that you're affecting there.
And in terms of the shorter time period, one of the things you can do at the state level where you have a lot of power is in terms of the health insurance costs. So, for example, the mandates that Pennsylvania have are rather high. It raises the price of individual health insurance policies by at least 46%, according to our data. I mean, that's a big chunk of money that Pennsylvanians are losing that they could have in their own pockets, and that would actually, I think, help them, especially in economically distressed times.
Well, absolutely. Some real practical opportunities for us to improve our freedom here in Pennsylvania. William, Jason, thanks for joining me here today on The Box.
Thank you. Enjoyed it.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.